Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
I have an 8-year-old and then this little baby who's 1.5. And the 8-year-old is kind of like curious about all the older kids stuff. I actually told her what the swear words were this morning. She asked and I was like, I'm going to just tell you what they are and how to spell them. And if I tell you them, would you just not say them? Just not say them for a while.
My mother really never told me anything. But then when I went and was like, hey, what about this? She was like, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? It's like, wait a minute, what do you mean? Why don't you tell me? She's like, I don't know. I thought I'd wait for you.
Amazing.
Hello, I'm Minnie Driver. Welcome to Mini Questions Season 2. I've always loved Proust's Questionnaire. It was originally a 19th century parlor game where players would ask each other 35 questions aimed at revealing the other player's true nature. It's just the scientific method, really. In asking different people the same set of questions, you can make observations about which truths appear to be universal. I love this discipline. And it made me wonder, what if these questions were just the jumping off point? What greater depths would be revealed if I asked these questions as conversation starters with thought leaders and trailblazers across all these different disciplines? So I adapted Proust's Questionnaire and I wrote my own 7 questions that I personally think are pertinent to a person's story. They are, when and where were you happiest? What is the quality you like least about yourself? What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you? What question would you most like answered? What person, place, or experience has shaped you the most? What would be your last meal? And can you tell me something in your life that's grown out of a personal disaster? And I've gathered a group of really remarkable people, ones that I am honored and humbled to have had the chance to engage with. You may not hear their answers to all 7 of these questions. We've whittled it down to which questions felt closest to their experience or the most surprising or created the most fertile ground to connect.
My guest today on Mini Questions is musician and multiple Tony Award winner, Anais Mitchell. Anais wrote the extraordinarily brilliant musical Hadestown, which won 8 Tonys out of 14 nominations, including Best Musical and Best Original Score. She is, by any standard, a musical bloody genius. And her curiosity, her talent, and her spirit feel like they permeate all aspects of her life. Hadestown is a telling of the Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice through jazz, folk, rock, and pure Americana.
I don't know if you know the story of Orpheus and Eurydice. Orpheus descends into the underworld to rescue his love, Eurydice. And when Hades, king of the underworld, allows him to take her back to the world, his only instruction is that Orpheus must not look back as they are ascending up into the world and Eurydice is walking behind him. And in this moment of what I have always thought of as sort of thick-headed hubris, although Aeneas sees it differently, Orpheus looks back and Eurydice is lost to him forever. It's a sad myth, but Hadestown is full of the kind of raw, soulful joy that makes even the sad love story shine with magic. When and where were you happiest?
Yeah, when and where was I happiest? This one is so tricky. There's so many different moments and eras of my life. And I feel like immediately I'm like, oh, I should talk about birth of my children. I should, you know, things I should say. But the one that just popped into my mind first is this moment. I was 27 years old and I was coming out of like a kind of a stuck time in my life, like creatively, socially, just feeling like everything was inching along and never like coming to fruition. And it just felt kind of stuck. I guess it was my Saturn return, right? 27, kind of classic for that. So the first thing that happened was I read Eckhart Tolle's book for the first time. Have you read those books?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you read The Power of Now?
It was actually A New Earth was the first one I read.
Oh, yeah.
And I probably wouldn't have read it except someone I really trusted kind of said, here, they saw me in my Saturn return moment. They're like, here, you should read this book. I've reread it since, but it was the first time it really packs a wallop. For people that haven't read it, it's all about being present in the moment and kind of detaching like your experience of life and being in the world from all of the names that we put on it. So I'm reading this book and I'm like, I'll read a few pages and then just put it down and feel so alive and joyful. And at this moment, I was offered a gig opening a tour in Europe for a band, a big, much bigger band that I didn't really know, but I came to like really admire. And so it was me opening solo acoustic guitar for this big, beautiful band and riding on their bus, you know, in Europe. And we would kind of like stay up all night. We'd play the gig. We'd stay up all night listening to music. What was the thing before the iPhone? The iPod, right? Like pass around the iPod and everyone would get to choose music. And we just were so in love with music. And I remember this one morning that we woke up, we had a day off and we were in Paris and we like rolled out of the bus and there's this little cafe and started to drink beer, you know, in the daylight, like these tall French beers. And then just like coming out of this cafe and the sun was shining, it was kind of cold day, the sun is shining. And I looked across the street and there was the Louvre. And so I went to the Louvre and the art was hitting like 1,000 times as hard because the Eckhart Tolle and the beer.
And the
yeah. And the friendship, the camaraderie, and just being out there doing what I wanted to be doing. And so that was like a moment for me. That was a very happy time.
I love that. You know, what's funny is like the idea when we think about happiness, and it's certainly in having talked to loads of people about it, the idea of there being a sort of a purity in anything, that it is unalloyed, that there isn't a confluence of things happening at any one moment that creates these moments. Like it's, I feel like we're extraordinarily binary and going, well, if I'm doing this, I will be happy, this one thing. Whereas it's really Eckhart Tolle and it's beer and it's light and Paris and opportunity and probably your Saturn return. It's all these things.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Again and again, I come to the realization that like the big moments I'm often not as present for, like the winning of the Tony or whatever. I was like in a fugue state, you know, like I wasn't even there. And even my wedding, you know, which was like so beautiful. It felt like all my friends and family, this culmination of so much and this commitment. And it was kind of like an incredible party that I wasn't entirely at. And so I've just sort of have stopped looking for satisfaction and happiness from the moments when everyone's like, how does it feel? How does it feel?
I think that is exactly it. And as with most sort of like ruminations that I think we probably then forget about and get on with making the coffee or changing the diaper, it's like take your eye off the ball. Like my dad used to say when something was really bad, when something was really hard, stop looking at it, even though it feels overwhelming. Take your eye off it and get back into the sort of minutiae of what is happening, and you will start to metabolize your life again and weirdly piggyback your better feeling onto that shitty thing. I think these, in the same way that these huge moments, they require almost too much for us to be able to quantify, whereas it's these tiny moments, these fragments that you patch together, and suddenly that's where the explosion comes from.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. And I feel like two things jumped into my mind. One is like if you're doing a crossword puzzle, you know, and you get stuck on a clue and you just want to like bang your head against the newspaper
or
to find this clue. Yeah, or cheat, right? But usually like if you take a break, like you just got to take a break and put your mind somewhere else. And then the soft focus, like a lot of things come out of that soft focus. That's true creatively, I think, in writing.
When I'm writing, and when it's difficult, I walk. There is a whole thing neurologically that literally when you are physically doing something else, your brain stops worrying. Your right and left brain are sort of more balanced when you add in another activity. So it actually kind of makes sense. But I always find that the great unblocking comes when I do something else.
Yeah. At one point when I was working on Hadestown, I was living in Park Slope in Brooklyn, and I was kind of borrowing my friend's studio, which was in Lefferts Gardens around the other side of the park, as a writing spot. So I would get on my bike and I would ride around Prospect Park to get to the studio, and I would have all these ideas. Like I'd have ideas on the bike. Sometimes I'd roll around the park, the whole park, and then get to Lefferts Garden, get to the studio, get to the desk, and then nothing, you know, nothing would happen at the desk. Just as such an illustration of that soft focus. And I even feel like in my life, I've noticed like side projects often are so magical. And Hadestown, you know, for a long time, it was a side project. I felt like my songwriter career was the main thing. And then this weird other thing I'm going to kind of soft focus on. At a certain point, it became the main thing. But there's a charmed quality to those things that we're not obsessing over.
How did you write? Because you wrote another record while you were writing Hadestown. Bonnie.
Exactly. Bonnie Light Horseman.
Like, was that what you were talking about? Was that you had to take your eye off the ball and do something else? Or did you just owe a record and you had to write it?
Yeah, that felt the same way. It was a side project. I was like, this is not my identity. There's not a lot of anxiety around that music at all. And it was easy. I was working with these two beautiful friend collaborators, Josh Kaufman and Eric D. Johnson, and it felt easy. And usually I don't trust that. Like I think it's got to be hard or it's not going to be good. But that band felt like, oh, wow, it feels so intuitive and natural. And so it was at that point, that was the side project that was sort of giving me life.
So interesting. I think my dad might have been a bit of an Eckhart Tolle, because I do think it's like take your mind off the thing and put it elsewhere. And then the thing will work itself out and you'll get everything that you need to solve that problem by doing this other thing. As with most personal growth, it sounds counterintuitive, which is probably why we don't do it enough. Because it's like, wow, that sounds crazy. I'm not going to do that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The director of Hadestown, Rachel Chavkin, is like kind of a Jedi.
Yeah.
Jedi creative person. And she gets a lot of good ideas when she's napping. And she'll take these little naps where she's very good at falling asleep in the middle of the day, you know, anywhere. Just kind of like go in a back room and lay on the floor and can like make herself fall asleep. And the way that she does it is she lays down and then she says she frays the mind by thinking about like three or four things at once, like three or four things that she's interested in. She'll put her mind on them at once. And that kind of is like enough to knock her out.
And then I love it. She fries her own circuit board.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly. And somehow the frying of the circuit board then leads to like these great ideas that happen in the nap state.
In the nap space. Mm. Well, that's also her book now. It's called Nap Space.
Yeah.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
What quality do you like least about yourself?
I am definitely someone who overthinks and second guesses a lot. And I think just an insecurity that I feel like I've lived with my whole life and I keep expecting it to go away. You know, as like I get older, I'm like, when am I going to give less? Can I swear on this show or no swearing?
Oh, yeah, you can swear. Absolutely. I give you full permission.
Like not like give no fucks anymore or fewer, you know, give fewer. I haven't arrived there yet. I care too much sometimes. Did I say something awkward? Is this song, you know, as good as it could be? Do I look bad? You know, things like that. It's exhausting.
Do you find that the achievements, so as you're standing there with the hardware of a Tony, like, well, multiple Tonys in your hands, did you ever sort of consciously allow that to mitigate that other voice? Like, do you ever think back to your achievements and help them soothe those moments of insecurity?
I think no. The one thing I will say I feel a little bit more confident about now is that I've written enough songs that I know that at the moment when I'm like, I don't know how to write a song, there's no way I'm going to finish this song. There's, you know, I kind of can look back and be like, well, you did finish all those other songs, so probably it's going to happen. You know, that feels a little more sure for me. But in terms of like, I'm meeting somebody at a party and I'm like, I want a Tony. It doesn't cross my mind, you know.
Literally in the bathroom. I want a Tony. I want a Tony. Yeah. I want a Tony. Hi, yeah. How are you?
Taking like a power stance in the women's room.
We certainly allow ourselves to be haunted by the shitty things that happen to us.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we allow ourselves to be beautifully haunted by those things that we've achieved? I wonder why we don't do that more. They're there, they're available energy and actually fundamentally tangible. Like, you did these things. I do that sometimes with my son. I look at Henry when things are not working out and go, I made a person. I made a person who is so funny and talented and kind and good, and give myself some sort of credit for that.
Yeah, kids do kind of change the equation a little bit, because it's like your relationship with them has nothing to do with your creative accomplishments.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's kind of like there's a foundation of family love that is going to be there. However awkward you are at a party, it's going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How old is your son?
He's just turned 13.
Oh, amazing. Wow.
It is completely bananas because it's the same. It's the same feeling as when they were 1.5 or when they were 6 months old. I'm 7,000 miles away from my son right now and it's brutal.
Yeah.
Even though I know he's totally fine and happy and doing his thing, it's just, I don't think that ever goes away. That feeling of I need to be in close proximity.
Yeah, I wonder what it's like for my parents now, you know? Like in adult life, if you still have those feelings or not.
It's funny. I think they do. I just think that there's more space in between because that the letting go, which is what nobody ever tells you about parenting, the very first thing, literally, physically, that you do with your child is let go.
Right.
Everything is more letting go. And I think as you get older, I was very close with my mother, but I watched how she would foster those spaces in between because she knew that we had to go and do our thing. But I know now that it was active and conscious and probably quite painful.
Right.
I know, it's brutal, actually. I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful and brutal, parenting, because I would have Henry carry me around in his book bag. Like, if possible, I'd just, like, get inside his backpack and just be like, I'll sit here through double chemistry with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to be by you. What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you?
I'm kind of a romantic. Like, I always have kind of been a romantic and loved the idea of, you know, love at first sight and a kind of twin souls, you know, and yeah, that idea that you meet someone. I'm thinking of Orpheus and Eurydice right now because this.
That's what it was.
Yeah. I remember like a bunch of times in the sort of dramaturgical trenches of working on the show, people with the dramaturg or like someone else would be like, but why does he love her? You know, why does Orpheus love Eurydice? And I would be like, because he's Orpheus and she's Eurydice, which is not enough for, you know, a lot of people. They need to see the kind of causality. But the idea of this, what is written in the stars. And oh, another kind of fictional version of that that went deep for me is that Hemingway book, For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just these like young revolutionaries like fighting fascism and then they're in love and it's like the earth moves and all that stuff. And I feel like I've had an experience of that with my life partner. I've been with the same guy since I was 19. We were like not fully formed in our identities. You know, we were like wet clay when we met and it wasn't full on, you know, from the age of 19, there was kind of a courtship and there was some breakups and stuff, but there were a bunch of moments that felt like these star-crossed moments, like, oh my God, this is my person, you know, and almost like a scary, terrifying feeling because you see your mortality connected to it. It contains everything. This idea of like the love at first sight, it's like youthful infatuation and beauty. And then also, you know, you're going to die with this person. Like you see the whole thing and it contains all of it. And so there's a way in which it's almost like it's tragic, even if it's not Orpheus and Eurydice or Romeo and Juliet. It's like, even if you're married for 75 years and then you die in each other's arms, it's still like a tragedy at some level, right?
Wow. The span. I think that's pretty amazing. Like you hold a paradigm that is pretty massive. Had the idea at 19 to be able to be with someone, that kind of love and the love now. Are you in your like late 30s, like around?
I just turned 40.
Look at that, like that 20 year span, like that's incredible to be able to see the end and to not let it derail the now, to see it as tragic, to see it as beautiful, to see it as never ending. I mean, no wonder you love the Greeks, really. I woke up this morning thinking about Orpheus and Eurydice because the last thing, this person that he was my best friend and I loved him very, very, very much. We were together for a long time and then it ended horribly. The most helpful thing he ever said to me was, don't look back. And I've always linked it to Orpheus and Eurydice. I've always linked it to that moment of just don't look back. Just don't. I know what happens if you do. You know what happens if you do. Just don't do it. I think about those gifts that you get from people that have hurt you. And I wondered if he got it from Orpheus.
Yeah.
He loved the Greeks too, so.
And by don't look back for you, was it to not doubt yourself? Was it the idea of like, don't look down almost?
It is literally coming back to that Eckhart Tolle idea of, it is a complete illusion to look back, and feel that that is going to have really any relevance. And I know that's sort of a bold statement, but the now, this moment, to trust this now, to trust that all of the ideas that you think, like, if I look back, I will get this. If I look back and I pick over the bones of this thing, if I look back because I'm frightened, it will somehow make my now better. And that that is a fallacy. It's such an extraordinary gift that he gave me, because I think it often, particularly when I start being frightened about historical stuff that I'm worried is going to play out again in this now, I shriek it at myself sometimes. This morning, I was shrieking it at Orpheus, like, just don't look, but just keep walking and it's going to be fine. Like, trust. Yeah. You can't hear anything, you can't see anything, you don't know anything. Trust this very moment and you will be all right.
Oh, man. Yeah. A cosmic thing that kind of happened with our Orpheus and Eurydice. I think I'm allowed to tell, it's quite public at this point, but our actors that play Orpheus and Eurydice totally fell in love, you know.
Did they really? That's amazing.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, when I saw that that was happening, I was like, I hope they can keep it together because it's not going to be easy, you know, 6 months down the line, if there's a breakup and they're like trying to play these star-crossed lovers and... But they're still together. They made it through the pandemic. They're like got a dog. Like, it's beautiful. And they're so beautiful together. It's crazy because it's a story that the people know how it ends, but there's still a gasp. Like when he turns around, it's like, how did this happen?
That's exactly it. We want to change the ending of the story. Maybe like seeing the repetition of that over and over again, it's like you can't change that story, but you can take the piece that you're shrieking about and you can bring it into your life and go, I know how that works out.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also something about, like you're saying, that sort of this ex of yours gave you this piece of wisdom that you have carried on in your life, and that there's a way in which, like, almost like you light someone's candle with your candle and then, or their cigarette with your cigarette, and you keep a flame going. And that's kind of, I think, in the Orpheus story, at least the way it plays out with Hadestown, is like, well, okay, we still celebrate Orpheus because he kept the flame, and now it's someone else's turn.
God, that's such a beautiful image, like the relay of love.
Yes.
And we judge the tragic part of it, the part of it not working out. But actually, as you just said, like in your own life, it's part of the whole. The tragedy is always there present in the joy and the wonder. It doesn't diminish or take away. Orpheus seeing Eurydice in the forest or wherever it was that he saw her and falling madly in love, and the very short time that they had to love each other, or the short time that I had to love this man. It's not diminished by how it ended up in a way, but it's hard to hold that in your heart, that all these things can be true.
Yeah.
Poor humans. We're given so many tools that we just don't use.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
What would be your last meal?
For my last meal, I would like it to be a sort of a, like, this is your life meal, you know? That I could return to some dishes that were, you know how different times of your life you just do one dish a lot, and then maybe you're sick of it and you don't do it again, but then if you were to have it again, it reminds you of this era. And so here's what I'm gonna do. Is this okay? It's a few things.
Yes.
Okay. So for my childhood, So I grew up on this sheep farm, and my parents, they spent a little time on this Greek island when they were young hippies. Then, like, they carried the kind of romance for this Greek island with them, I think, in my childhood. And so my mom, she would make like a marinated lamb chop. It was all about just like marinate them like crazy with the family marinade and then broil them like really fast on both sides. And also, I think like she would make these Greek potatoes. They had lemon and garlic. And so I associate that with this sort of special family meal that we would have. Like if people came over for dinner, it was always like, we're going to have lamb. So I'm going to have that. And then, so my husband, my like life partner, he is a farmer of vegetables. And there's a couple of kind of vegetable dishes that I associate with him in different times of our life. And so I'll get his vegetables and I'll make like a kale salad. You massage the kale with, you know, the salt and the oil, and then maybe this feta and lemon and like maybe some toasted seeds. And they're all like finely ribboned up. And all right, what else was I thinking? Oh yeah, okay, so Hadestown. I worked on Hadestown for so long, and I spent a lot of time with Rachel Chavkin, the director, and our music director, Liam Robinson. And there was a whole era where we were working on the show out of town. And so we would be put up in these little flats. And a lot of times, like late at night, we'd come back to the flat, someone's flat, and we would fry some halloumi cheese. Like we all got into halloumi at the same time. And now if I taste a halloumi cheese, I picture this like really joyful time of like in the trenches with those guys working on that show, which was really like a third of my creative life was like working on that show. So I have the halloumi. I don't have a meaningful dessert, really. So I might just have like a chocolate mousse. You know, this is a thing that I always like, don't let myself have it, so I would have it.
Wow, I really like that there's a kind of Dickensian, let's go back and revisit the ghosts of meals past.
Yeah, it's like Proust. It's like the Madeleine and the tea.
That's a way better analogy.
Yeah.
I love that because it does. It lights up those parts of our life. So it really just becomes the illustration of memory in such an immediate way.
And food can do that. Like, and actually, I guess the sense of smell really does that in a way that, you know, you smell like a product, like a perfume that your boyfriend wore when you're like 14 or something. And it's just like a complete body slam of memory. And music is that way too. I feel like music does that too.
I couldn't agree more. But if I listen to Elliot Smith, it's so painful and it is so beautiful. I was in the studio with him while he was recording EXO, and when he was layering these vocals, and it was so funny, like watching somebody build something which is still standing, now he's gone. It's incredible. It's like experiencing the strongest moments of him.
Mm.
It's so interesting how there is music. It hits you on every single level and kind of takes your breath away.
It's so physiological. Like you really feel it in your body. And I'm the kind of person, I get like obsessed with one song. Almost like I can't breathe, like I need it. You know, like you get in the car and it's like, quick, get it on, like get it on the stereo, like I need it. And just I'll listen again and again and again to one song or one album or one artist at a time. And then if I hear that song, it takes me back.
Yeah, it's feeling, right? It's getting, having permission to feel again. Poor sweet humans. We can't marshal all of the stuff that there is to synthesize and feel in this life. And I think music is a way of doing that, as is food, as is love, I suppose.
Yeah, music is very calming for me, I find. Like, if I'm at home and, like, you know, the boredom of children.
Oh, yeah. Of small children. Yeah.
Yeah, small children. They're just like, they want to read the same board book a million times. And if I have music on, I don't mind. You know, if you're cooking something, they go together. If you're cooking something, you smell that thing cooking out of the kitchen and you've got the music on, everything is okay. You can sort of be cool.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Certainly with the children thing, it gives you a place to sit on that is above the grinding repetition of small children, which is obviously how they're learning. They need to repeat all that stuff, but it does make you go insane. But listening to whole records, I must say, I love doing that. My son's just started doing that and going, you know, because these children, they've just been indoctrinated with like a single or like a song. So playing him albums, he came running in the other day. He just listened to Inner Visions and he was like, Mom, it's connected. The whole thing is connected. And I was like, doing something else. I was like, wait, what do you mean? He's like, the songs, it's connected. Like if you listen to them one after the other. And I was like, oh, my sweet friend who's like born into the world of like infinite shuffle, like there is no connectivity. It was so brilliant, his little face when he saw that music could be written, you know, all the way through, and that an A side and a B side, like there was a reason that those five songs were there, the other five songs were there, and how they connected.
Yes, I love that. Well, first of all, I love your accent, your son, whatever, your impression of him.
I know he gets very annoyed because he doesn't really talk like this anymore, but he did his whole life. I have video to prove it. He always sounded like a tiny bookie from the Catskills.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Yeah, I know what you're talking about with the sequencing of an album. I completely lost my mind trying to sequence this record.
Did you?
Yeah, it took months. It took months. And it ultimately, I cut a couple songs.
That's the hardest thing. That is like killing something you love.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Nowadays, like you can put them out.
I know.
Like you can put them out as a couple songs, so it's not a big deal. But it feels like maybe it's a thankless job with this Bonnie Light Horseman music. We're all like obsessed with the album and the A side and the B side, and you know, how are they connected? Yeah, what's the narrative arc of things? Let alone, you know, here's the banjo on this one and the saxophone on this one, and this is in key of C, and this is in, you know.
You can't have two C's following each other. Well, this one can't, but it's like, but it does go after that. Well, it can't. Then you got to put it in a different key because all of those battles.
So tricky. But also nowadays, like because of the algorithms, like people may not hear the music in the order that you put it on the record. Like basically whatever is popular will then rise to the top. And that might be the first song people hear.
It is. That's exactly right. That's what the algorithm does. So this whole notion of it really was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like that's the order. I do like doing that with people's records and seeing what they meant. I really try to do that with a new record.
Yeah. No, I'm the same. I'm the same. It's special when songs can speak to each other. And a lot of times they do.
What person, place, or experience has most altered your life?
The person that leaps to mind is my grandma. My parents had a house, and then my grandparents also, when they were alive, had a house on the same land. And now, this is an aside, but my brother's family has a house on this farm.
Wow.
And we have recently left New York City, and we're living in Vermont, and we're going to renovate my grandparents' house and move into it. So it's kind of a full circle moment for us. But this house, my grandparents' house, like I spent a lot of time down there. It's literally my happy place. Like when I was getting ready to give birth for the first time, I did like a hypnobirthing class, you know, and they're like, what is your happy place? And I thought, it's my grandma's house. And I picture myself like laying on the floor with like a sunbeam coming in, like a carpeted floor and a sun coming in, the sliding glass door. My grandma was an incredibly creative woman that wasn't an artist per se. You know, she's a homemaker mostly and a sort of community member. And she was a quilter. She made quilts and amazing cook, amazing entertainer. She wrote letters every morning. So in the pandemic, we fled from New York. I was pregnant with our second baby. We had the baby on this farm and then we moved into my grandma's house and I found a box full of old like letters from my grandma and read them, and amazing eye for detail. Like it was always so-and-so was wearing this type of fabric, you know, and the hors d'oeuvres were like this, and like this type of bird is hanging out in the tree, like really an eye for detail. But there are two ways in which she really set me on a path. One was that she and my grandpa would travel a lot. My granddad was retired, but he was consulting. He was like a solar energy guy back in the day, you know, before it was cool. So he would be flying around. They'd go into like Europe and they would go to China and Australia. And my grandma would go, you know, with him, and they would bring me back things from wherever they were. And there always was this value of like, any chance you can travel, you got to do it. Like, they sort of instilled like a wanderlust that I think actually was pretty formative for me in terms of like becoming a touring musician. And the other thing they did is that they brought me home, I think from China, this tiny size violin when I was 7 years old. I had seen a woman in my elementary school in a beautiful dress. She came with a gown and she played the violin, and I thought, I'm gonna play the violin. And they brought home this, I think, a 1/8 size little red violin. And then they paid for my violin lessons as a child. And I would even go to their house in the morning to practice, like before I went to school.
Wow.
So eventually I gave up the violin and I picked up the guitar and I started to write songs. And I don't think of the violin as any part really of my musicality now, but as a formative instrument, like just to be living with that kind of melodic music, it was pretty huge for me. So I think the gift of that violin and the lessons and the space to practice it, because actually no parent wants a kid to be learning violin in their house. You know, you're terrible for years. And then the travel. I think like certainly I became someone really just, I wanted to tour around and play music. And so I thank her for that.
Oh my God, how lovely. Stringed instruments and wanderlust. That's pretty great.
Good combination.
Yeah. Really, I cannot thank you enough for coming and answering all these questions.
So fun. What an amazing format. I'm like really impressed. It was totally fascinating to hear like Tony Blair and Alan coming, like the just amazing variety of people and minds. And, you know, I'm just at the beginning of doing a bunch of interviews for the record I'm putting out. And it's like usually so boring. Like there's just no way to get access to something fresh, you know?
I'm dying to hear your next record. Amazing. So excited for this to be out in the world. I bet you are too. I mean, you know, you've been doing a lot of giving birth. Well done.
Thanks.
Anais's new self-titled album is out now, featuring the songs Bright Star, Brooklyn Bridge, and many more. You can also see Hadestown on Broadway now or on tour.
Mini Questions is hosted and written by me, Minnie Driver. Supervising producer, Aaron Kaufman. Producer, Morgan Lavoie. Research assistant, Marissa Brown. Original music, Sorry Baby, by Minnie Driver. Additional music by Aaron Kaufman. Executive produced by me, Minnie Driver. Special thanks to Jim Nicolay, Will Pearson, Addison O'Day, Lisa Castella and Anique Oppenheim at WKPR, De La Pescador, Kate Driver and Jason Weinberg, and for constantly solicited tech support, Henry Driver.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.